the book everybody's asked me to go through. Numbers. It will be good, I think. A couple weeks back, since I wasn't here last week, we did start this book, and we were introduced to the book with the numbering of those 20 years old and upward, those that were able to go to war, men of war, so to speak, that were numbered. We dealt with all of those things. The Levites were not numbered because they weren't going to serve in the army. They were going to serve the priest and the things of the tabernacle they were going to take care of. Today's lesson continues with some of the groundwork of this book before actually getting in some of those historical things that we're looking forward to. So I'm going to try to cover two chapters a day. We won't read every verse here, but we will read enough, I hope, to at least gain some understanding of what's going on. But we will read these first nine verses. Numbers chapter 2. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "The people of Israel shall camp each by his own standard with the banners of their fathers' houses. They shall camp facing the tent of meeting on every side. Those to camp on the east side toward the sunrise shall be of the standard of the camp of Judah by their companies, the chief of the people of Judah being Nashon, the son of Amminadab. His company, as listed, being 74,600. Those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Issachar, the chief people of Issachar being Nathanael, the son of Zuar, his company, as listed, being 54,400. Then the tribe of Zebulun, the chief of the people of Zebulun being Eliab, the son of Helon, his company, as listed, being 57,400. All those listed of the camp of Judah by their companies were 186,400. They shall set out first on the march." That's going to be the way that it does all four sides of the tabernacle. Named exactly like that. The difference is going to be that there will be different tribal names inserted and different numbers. Everything else will read exactly that way. We're not going to read all those, but we will point out exactly who it was, where they were, and what they were doing. First of all, I want you to understand, God is a God of order. Where there is disorder, it is not God's fault. There was order all the way back to creation. In the beginning was God. He created this on the first day. He created this on the second day. He created this on the third day. He created this on the fourth. God is a God of order. There is a plan. Everything works exactly like it is supposed to work when God leads. Where there is disorder, Satan is leading. Where there is order, God is leading. You see, that's the way that it is. Even in the church. Now, we're not told everything about a church service and how to carry it out. It's not like the tabernacle or the temple worship where you are told on this day at this time you are to bring in this exact amount of stuff, you are to place it here, you are to splatter the blood here, you are to do all of this. We're not given all those ins and outs of church worship, are we? I mean, we may sing two songs, we may sing three, we may not even tell a guy we're not singing the second verse. We may, we don't know about a lot of those things, but this we know. 1 Corinthians 14:40 says, "But all things should be done decently and in order." Why? God is a God of order. And where disorder is, God is not leading. That's a blanket statement. And I believe it to be true. You can relate that to any and everything in the world. Whether we're talking about family, job, Walmart, or whatever, church. God is a God of order. And this chapter shows us that. If it doesn't show us anything else, God is a God of order. So we see order here as this chapter spells out the way that Israel was to camp. Each camp will camp under a standard or a flag. Now, I don't know exactly what these flags were. We're not told anywhere in Scripture what they are. I don't know exactly what they look like. And I don't know what was on them. I just know they were flags. And there were four of them. Two other tribes would be behind the leading tribe. The leading tribe that we just read about happened to be Judah. We'll deal with that here in just a second. Two other tribes camped with them, but Judah was the leading tribe, so Judah had the flag. But I did think that Kyle and Delich had something interesting to say. You guys that teach, if you're ever stumped in the Old Testament and you want a view that's a little more gilly, a little more in-depth, Kyle and Delich is a good place to go. Now, they throw in a lot of Hebrew words, and you'll just have to mentally ignore those. But they say a lot of neat things. This is what they say about these flags. Neither the Mosaic Law nor the Old Testament generally give us any intimation as to the form or character of the standard, the flag. According to rabbinical tradition... You know, Brian, I hate to even bring that up because a rabbinical tradition was so terrible on so many things, but historically, oftentimes, you can trust them. Sort of like Josephus. I don't think Josephus was ever a believer, but we trust his history because it was pretty good about the life and times of the Lord Jesus Christ. According to rabbinical tradition, the standard of Judah, the flag of Judah, bore the figure of a lion. That of Reuben, the likeness of a man, or of a man's head at least. That of Ephraim, the figure of an ox. And that of Dan, the figure of an eagle. Now, those of you that have never read through the Bible or have never read a lot of the Old Testament, those may not be familiar to you. But those of you that have read the Old Testament, those particular animals may jump out to you as common because we see them elsewhere. They go on and say, so that the four living creatures united in the cherubic forms described by Ezekiel were represented upon these four standards. See, Ezekiel saw a vision of the Lord and His throne. And on His throne, or under His throne, were four cherubim. And the cherubim had the faces that were different on either side. Guess what they were? They were a lion, a man, an ox, and an eagle. Is that exactly what these were? I don't know. There's no way to know. But this seems viable anyway. This passage that we just read, verses 1 through 9, names the names of the tribe that is the tribes, I should say, who is to camp on the east side of the tabernacle. Notice, by the way, what does everything revolve around in the camp? Everything has a place relative to the tabernacle. Well, your life needs to be lived relative to God's will and where God is. That's what we find represented here. The tribes were camped under the standard or the flag of Judah. So Judah was the leading tribe here. Judah had 74,600 fighting men. Issachar had 54,400 fighting men. Zebulun had 400 fighting men. By those numbers just don't look as plain as they should be. There were 186,400 fighting men camped on the east side. And when they marched first. You say, that's specific. Well, God is a God of order. We just dealt with that. Verses 10 through 16 gives us another side. This passage actually tells us who is to camp on the south side of the tabernacle. Still in relation to where the tabernacle is located, these tribes were on the south side. They were camped under the standard of Reuben. So Reuben was the leading tribe on that side. Reuben had 46,500 fighting men. And notice Simeon had 59,000, more than Reuben. It was not based upon who had the most in number. You say, what was it based upon? I'm not real sure. But it wasn't based on that. Because Clearly, Simeon had about 13,000 more than Reuben did. Gad had 45,650 fighting men. There were about 151,450 fighting men camped on the south side. And when they marched, the south side went second. That's order. This is the way it was done. By the way, I want you to think about this. How many times did they move in the wilderness? A lot. 40 years. Should have been how many days' journey? 11. They stayed at one place 30 days, and they ended up taking what should have taken 40 days, if they stayed 30 days, took them 40 years. And they moved a lot. So this was happening a lot. They got really good at taking down the tabernacle, putting up the tabernacle, and moving and doing all these things. They got really good at it because God had them moving all the time. There were times they'd stay somewhere one day, put up the tabernacle, take it down, next day, move on out. They got good at it. Verse 17. Then the tent of meeting shall set out with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camps. As they camp, so shall they set out, each in position, standard by standard. So in marching, you had those first two groups that set out, the east side and the south side. Then the Levites went after that. The tent of meeting with them, because that was their job, to take the tent of meeting. When marching, the Levites went after those tribes that marched under the standard of Reuben. This put the tent of meeting and all of its utensils in the middle of the camp as they marched. Then we're back in verse 18 through 24 to talking about another side of the tabernacle and who camped there. This passage in 18 through 24 tells us who is to camp on the west side of the tabernacle. These tribes were camped under the standard of Ephraim. The flag. You say, did they have to know? They had to know, but God told them to do it nonetheless, and that's what they needed to do. Ephraim had 40,500 fighting men, Manasseh 32,200, Benjamin 35,400. There were 108,100 fighting men camped on the west side. When marching, these tribes set out after the Levites. They were the third group of tribes to go other than the Levites. 25 through 31 gives us who is to camp on the north side. These tribes were camped under the standard of Dan. That's hard to comprehend if you know the future of the tribe of Dan. Dan will become an idolatrous tribe and will not receive, even in Revelation, part of the blessing. So Dan had a leadership role, so perhaps their sin was greater than what we often think about. Dan totaled 62,700 fighting men. Asher, 41,500 fighting men. Naphtali, 53,400 fighting men. There were 157,600 fighting men camped on the north side. When marching, these tribes set out last. So, specific order. We need to keep order in the church. We're not told exactly how to do it, but there needs to be order. Verse 32. These are the people of Israel as listed by their fathers' houses. All those listed in the camps by their companies were 603,550. Same number we saw in the previous chapter. But the Levites were not listed among the people of Israel as the Lord commanded Moses. Thus did the people of Israel according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So they camped by their standards, and so they set out, each one in his clan according to his father's house. So as we saw in the previous chapter, in chapter 1, verse 46, the total number of fighting men were 603,550. Chapter 1, they were just numbered. Chapter 2, they are told how they are to camp. Their number is given again to show that it's the same number. God is consistent there. We're also reminded that the Levites were not listed, and the people of Israel, interestingly, here, did what they were told to do. Now, they may not do that a week later, But here, they did do this. Chapter 3. These are the generations of Aaron and Moses at the time when the Lord spoke with Moses on Mount Sinai. These are the names of the sons of Aaron: Nadab, the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. These are the names of the sons of Aaron, the anointed priests, whom he ordained to serve as priests. But Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests in the lifetime of Aaron, their father. Sons of Aaron are listed here. Nadab and Abihu, if you've read through Leviticus already this year, then you've read this in chapter 10, verse 1 and 2. They died for offering fire which was only to be offered by the high priest. They weren't authorized to give that fire, so the Lord took their life. Interestingly, Aaron was told, don't mourn for them. They broke the law. You go on with your job. That'd be tough, wouldn't it? That's what the Lord told Aaron. Eleazar and Ithamar served as priests in the lifetime of Aaron, their father. Verse 5, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, bring the tribe of Levi near and set them before Aaron the priest, that they might minister to him. They shall keep guard over him, over the whole congregation, before the tent of meeting as they minister at the tabernacle. They shall guard all the furnishings of the tent of meeting and keep guard over the people of Israel as they minister at the tabernacle. And you shall give the Levites to Aaron and his sons. They are wholly given to him from among the people of Israel. And you shall appoint Aaron and his sons, and they shall guard their priesthood. But if any outsider comes near, he shall be put to death. The law is strict. We don't want to be under the law. We want to be under grace. The Levites were given to Aaron to help him. Aaron and his family were priests. The Levites weren't priests, not in the sense that Aaron was. They were simply given to Aaron to help him. Any non-priest that tried to do the duty of a priest died. Period. No questions asked. Put him to death. We actually see that happen in the future at times. We saw that happen in a sense with two of Aaron's sons when they weren't the high priest. They tried to do the duties of the high priest. Verse 11, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, behold, I have taken the Levites from among the people of Israel instead of every firstborn who opens the womb among the people of Israel. The Levites shall be mine. I'm taking the Levites instead of the firstborn. The Levites shall be mine. For all the firstborn are mine. On the day that I struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I consecrated for my own all the firstborn of Israel, both man and of beast. They are mine. I am the Lord. The firstborn of Israel were the Lord's because He struck down the firstborn of Egypt when He rescued Egypt. He rescued Israel from slavery. When He took the firstborn of Egypt, He said, okay, you're rescued, but now you owe me your firstborn. Out of all the tribes, every firstborn from every tribe was the Lord's. Every firstborn from all the animals was the Lord's. But they didn't end up having to give all of the firstborn from every tribe because the Levites were given in place of all of the firstborn. Substitution. That's an important doctrine, by the way, in God's Word. Isn't it? I mean, is the doctrine of substitution important? Who is our substitute? Christ. That's the most important time substitution is important in the Bible, but there are other times that God... You know, well, how about when Abraham carried Isaac up the hill? The animal was offered instead of Isaac. Right? substitution. And we see that here as well. In verses 14 through 39, we are actually given where the Levites and the priests were to camp around the tent of meeting. Now, if you're getting a messed up picture, I'm sorry. I know that we already have who is to be on the east side, the south side, the west side, and the north side. That's the tribes. But when we begin to think here, we are inside those tribes. We are right around the tabernacle itself. Those tribes were back a bit from the tabernacle. The Levites were right inside near the tabernacle. They were going to march there anyway, right? They were in the middle marching. Well, the Lord's pretty smart. He had them camp right there inside. So they didn't have to come through all of the tribes. They just picked up camp where they already were. Aaron and his sons actually ended up camping right at the east side of the tabernacle. Why was that? That's where the door to the tabernacle was, and they were the ones going in doing all the serving. God is a God of order. In this passage, we learn the Gershonites, the descendants of Gershon, camped on the west. They numbered 7,500 males. They were responsible for the coverings of the tabernacle. Badger skins, all of those things which hung over the tabernacle, the curtains, those coverings that you read about, that you, when you finished a chapter and you finished a day's reading, you were like, oh, thank goodness. Those things. They toted the coverings. The Kohathites camped on the south side of the tabernacle. They numbered 8,600 males according to the Hebrew Masoretic text. That's the one that every Bible or every English Bible is based upon, the Hebrew Masoretic text. It's the New Testament that they argue about textual criticism. There are various Greek texts. There is one Old Testament Hebrew Masoretic text that all the Bible uses. And the number here is 8,600. But that number doesn't exactly add up. Write down here in a minute. It's 300 off. You say, well, something's wrong somewhere. Well, there is one explanation. Interestingly enough, God preserved another Old Testament for us. It is the Old Testament that Jesus quoted from 2/3 of the time. It is the Old Testament that the apostles quoted from 2/3 of the time. It was not the Hebrew Masoretic text. It was the Greek Septuagint translation of the Old Testament. And interestingly enough, that number is 8,300 in that Bible that Jesus and the apostles used predominantly. And guess what? 8,300 adds up just right. What's the argument? Well, the argument would be that sometime after the translation of the Septuagint was done, some scribe just copied it down wrong, but the Septuagint kept it. Is that amazing that God would preserve that for us and we can find that? I'd call that sovereignty. That's what I would call that. The Moraites, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing all these right. Oh, let me back up. The Kohathites were responsible for the holy objects of the tabernacle. The Ark of the Covenant, the lamp, the table of showbread and all that stuff. See, I didn't think they got to see those things. They didn't. They didn't get to see those things. They got to carry them. They didn't get to see them. Before they took down the tabernacle, Aaron and the priests went in and covered those things up. Then, you remember those holes that were bored in the side and they had those poles to carry those things with? Then they went in and got them after they were covered. How about that? That's pretty amazing, isn't it? The Moraites camped on the north of the tabernacle. They numbered 6,200 males. They were responsible for the wooden framework of the tabernacle. So the first group gets to carry all those beautiful curtains. At least the outside wasn't beautiful, but the inside was beautiful. Second group gets to take the holy objects. This one, wood and stuff. They may have felt cheated. I don't know. They should have felt important. Because if they didn't do their job, the tabernacle couldn't be set up. One guy, did God build a bunch of extra stuff to carry with the tabernacle? No. They were to build exactly what was needed, not one extra tent peg. If the guy who was supposed to get the tent peg didn't get the tent peg when they got to the next place, they couldn't finish their job. You know what? Even in the church, some people just carrying tent pegs, folks. I mean, that doesn't seem important until you go to set the tabernacle up and you can't do it because there's a missing tent peg. Every person is placed in the church for a reason. Those things which don't seem important are just as important. The guy with the tent peg was deemed pretty important when they couldn't put the tabernacle up because there was a peg missing. How about that? That's a good point. Numbers. Moses, Aaron, and his sons were to camp on the east. It is repeated that any authorized person that came near the tabernacle was to be put to death. Look at verse 38. Those who were to camp on the tabernacle on the east before the tent of meeting, toward the sunrise, were Moses and Aaron and his sons guarding the sanctuary itself. That's where the entrance to the tabernacle was. To protect the people of Israel, any outsider who came near was to be put to death. Oh, he just accidentally stumbled up. Tough. He's going to be put to death. That's the law. The law does not give. You see, we live in the day of grace, and we see God's forgiveness, and we see God's mercy, and we see those things. That is not the law. The law does not give. Do me or die. That's the law. That's why we don't want the law. People today aren't keeping the law. They may believe they are, but they are not keeping the law. We don't want to be under the law. One strike against the law, and you are gone. That's it. The number of the Levites were 22,000 even. Again, if you go back and add those up, you need that middle number to be 8,300, not 8,600, for it to equal 22,000. God miraculously gave us the Septuagint. And Jesus, by the way, put His stamp of approval on the Septuagint by using it predominantly. That's amazing, folks. That is the providence that I was talking about this morning. It's amazing. Verse 40, the Lord said to Moses, list all the firstborn males of the people of Israel from a month old and upward, taking the number of their names. Now, why is he doing this? Because what he just said a second ago, all of the firstborn from all the tribes were the Lord's. But the Levites were going to be given in place of those firstborn. So now we're going to number them. We know we have 22,000 Levites. How many firstborn do we have? Well, let's see. You shall take the Levites for me, I am the Lord, instead of all the firstborn from among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites, instead of all the firstborn of the cattle of the people of Israel. So Moses listed the firstborn among the people of Israel as the Lord commanded him, and all the firstborn males, according to the number of names, from a month old and upwards, as listed, were 22,273. How many Levites do we have? 22,000. How many firstborn did we have? 22,273. We're not even. We got an overage. And we have a problem. You see, each Levite was going to stand for one man. They were short 273 people. Well, something had to give. The law is the law. You can't back up. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, verse 45, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, the cattle of the Levites instead of their cattle. The Levites shall be mine, I am the Lord. And as the redemption price for the 273 of the firstborn of Israel, over and above the number of male Levites, you shall take 5 shekels per head. God allowed for that. You shall take them according to the shekel of the sanctuary, the shekel of the temple, 20 gerahs, give the money to Aaron and his sons at the redemption price for those who are over. So Moses took the redemption money from those who were over and above the redeemed by the Levites. from the firstborn of the people of Israel, he took the money, 1,365 shekels by the shekel of a sanctuary, and Moses gave the redemption money to Aaron and his sons according to the word of the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moses. So Moses numbered the firstborn males of all Israel. Then the Levites were to be substituted in the place, but there was an overage. There were 273 more than the 22,000 Levites. These were redeemed at 5 shekels per head. This money was given to Aaron, and it totaled 1,365 shekels. You say, I didn't catch all that when I read through earlier. Well, this may have been that last chapter of 5 chapters that day, and it just got tough at the end. It is what it is, but that's what it is. I got a couple of pictures for you I want you to see. I know I don't do this very often, but I want you to see what's going on. Okay, tabernacle. I can't reach both screens, sorry. You'll just have to look where you're at. You see, everybody's camped around the outside. This is the east side. That's where the entrance is at. Who's camped here? Aaron and his sons. Inside the tabernacle, you got the brazen altar that y'all read about, like a chapter devoted to all of its dimensions. This is where sacrifice was done. Brazen laver. You know, think about this, by the way. I've heard people try to say, well, the brazen laver clearly is typifying baptism, which I do not believe. I do not believe that. But even if that's right, you got to go past the sacrifice first before you get to the brazen laver, right? You got to know Christ before you baptize, even if that's true, and I don't believe that it is. Then you got what we call the tabernacle proper, where all of the things were inside of there. Flip that screen for me one more time, please, ma'am. Inside, you had the menorah, you had the table of showbread, you had the altar of incense, you had the veil, and behind the veil, you had the Ark of the Covenant. Around it, Moses and the priests on the east side. The Merarites camped on the north. The Gershonites camped on the west. The Kohathites camped on the south. That's all of the Levites right around the tabernacle itself. Go one more time for me, please, ma'am. When you back out, see, this picture just shows you all of what we just saw in one little square, the Levites. On the outside of them, you had Judah, Issachar, Zebulun on the east, Reuben, Simeon, Gad on the south, Ephraim, Manasseh, Benjamin on the west, Dan, Naphtali, and Asher on the north. This particular thing, which we just grabbed off Google, did have these same things going on here, these flags, these symbols. Is that it? Oh no. When they marched, this is how they took out. Judah went first with those under their flag, then Reuben, then the tent of meeting. Those with Ephraim went next, those with Dan went next. That's how they marched every time. I think that's it. Yes. When, again, they took it up and put it down a bunch of times in the wilderness. Now, I'm sure the first time they did it, it was slow. But after they did it a while, it was quick. I heard a guy say, and I don't know if it's true or not, I read it, I meant to give you the quote on it, who the guy was, when I was studying this week, say that he believed that they could put that tabernacle up in about 30 minutes. Now, when we're reading, it takes us that long to read the chapter. But he said he believed they could put it up in about 30 minutes. After they got good at it, not initially. It may take them a while. They may have to go back and read the chapter. But after you've done it a few times, you get quicker at stuff, don't you? He said he believed about 30 minutes. Didn't take that long, probably take it down, but to put it up, about 30 minutes. Well, it had to be pretty quick for them to camp somewhere one day, put up the tabernacle. They didn't get to not put it up. They had to put it up every time they camped. They didn't know where to camp if they didn't put it up. Everything was relative to the tabernacle. God's Shekinah glory was on the tabernacle. So they put it up and they took it down every single time. So I hope that gives you a little bit of understanding of those two chapters and what they're about. They're just about where the people were to be, how they were to march, where all of the Levites were to be on the inside, and how that those 22,000 Levites plus 5 shekels a head for those 273 over, redeemed the firstborn of Israel that they owed God from the firstborn of Egypt being redeemed. There's a lot in that. There's a lot in that chapter, actually, or those two chapters. A lot to be seen. Good Lord willing, we will move on next week into chapter 4. I hope that you're learning a little bit in Numbers. It's a pretty neat book. You'll enjoy it when we get to some of the other things as well. I'm going to ask you to stand, if you will. Paul Brown, Sr., will you please dismiss us, sir?